Welcome to the F3, Female Forward Finance. I'm your host, Jill Faraday Lloyd, a financial advisor at UBS Private Wealth, and I'm on a mission to help women have agency with their capital. The F3 is a space for real conversations about money, power, and everything in between. You'll hear from experts, entrepreneurs, and everyday Janes about the choices they're making when it comes to their wealth. These are critical conversations because women are earning, building, and shaping what comes next in the world, and it's time we own every bit of our power. With Valentine's Day right around the corner, some of you might be asking quiet questions about love, commitment, and what you're staying loyal to. Today's discussion sits right at the intersection of love, money, and clarity. I'm joined by Libby Leffler, founder and CEO of FIRST, a modern legal platform changing the way couples approach prenuptial agreements. This episode is about far more than prenups. It's about identity, inheritance, the great wealth transfer, and why planning for change, whether in love or in business, is an act of self-respect. I'm so glad you're here. Let's dive in. Well, today I am delighted to be joined by Libby Leffler. Libby is the founder and CEO of FIRST. FIRST is trusted by couples at some of the world's largest tech companies, and it's been featured in Vogue, Fortune, New York Magazine, and Business Insider for democratizing access to quality legal protection. Before founding FIRST, Libby was Sheryl Sandberg's first chief of staff at Meta and held key roles across sales, partnership, and business development. She later led major markets at Compass, served as the VP and business unit leader at SoFi, and she began her career at Google. She holds a business degree from UC Berkeley and an MBA with highest distinction from Harvard Business School. She's smart, she's savvy, she's in the know, and I'm delighted to have her. Welcome, Libby. Jill, thank you for having me on. I am a fan and frequent listener, so I'm so excited to be a guest today. Thank you for including me at the perfect time of year heading into Valentine's.
Well, listen, Isawar fits right at the intersection of love and money and clarity. So I'd like to start there. You've said that the most expensive decisions that people make are in business and in love. So what are the realizations that helped you understand that? What makes you say that?
Well, aren't they? I mean, to think about how much of our life we spend at work, and every time that we take a job, we leave a job, we make a change, we're always negotiating, right? We're trading our time and talent and energy for some financial compensation. So I think the first time in my life that this really came to light for me was when I was starting out in tech and wanting to work at some of the hottest tech companies in the world and thinking about those offers coming in and feeling really, really lucky to have those offers, right? And that's like, you know, you're going through this long process and going there, and how do you negotiate? And do you negotiate? And I think you learn some of these lessons early on, and these can be really hard lessons when you're in a team of people and inevitably, down the road, someone starts talking about compensation and you kind of learn, hey, the person next to me doing the same job did a better job negotiating than I did. Over time, as these conversations have evolved, and Jill, you know about this more than anyone, you know, as we've become more comfortable talking about money, there's more of the dialogue out there about negotiation, how you negotiate. But I think these are expensive decisions, but you know, if you're working at a company where you might have a mix of compensation, cash, and equity, leaving equity on the table, for example, and choosing not to negotiate can be a really expensive decision that one might regret later. I think in love, right, think about the partner you end up with as probably the biggest career determinant of success for anyone. And so this is really about choosing the right person and that alignment. Divorce is expensive. we all know a friend at this point who's kind of gone through situation, and, you know, I've supported friends and, you know, sat by their side as they moved through this process previously. And, you know, these are tough emotional, but also financial decisions. And so I really think those two things in business and in love, like these are the things that can really determine our financial future. And so it's so important that we take those really seriously.
I love that. And I like this idea of reframing both your value at work and your value in a relationship. So this notion, let's stick with marriage and prenup for now. I believe that a lot of women are raised to think that planning for the end of a relationship through a prenup means that you don't fully believe in the beginning. So how do you reframe that conversation for couples?
We think the smartest thing that you can do is plan for these types of things when the situation is calm. You can have clear, rational communication and that frame of mind that will allow you to make very deliberate decisions now. Because we know in both business and in love, when you are parting ways, even if it's really amicable, emotions do come into play. So at first, we always talk about when we work with our customers, we hope this is the best agreement that you never have to use. We don't really want anybody to have to pull this out and use it because we're really pro marriage and we're pro these relationships working. But in my view, there's actually no better time to believe in the outcome of your business or your marriage or the love, the loving relationship you're in, than to be planful about it, to be deliberate about it, and to have those respectful conversations up front.
I couldn't agree with you more. I found in my relationship with my female founder friend, right, is planning for the end is how you actually exit with the most. And so, like, my conversation with Stephanie Kirkpatrick, for example, in my previous F3, we talked about the importance of, you know, taking the 83B election for a female founder, for all founders, right? To make sure that you can exit with the most. Shouldn't I? So, you know, on that vein of in my work with founders, yeah, I see how easily ownership gets tangled with identity. Do you see that same dynamic show up in relationships when people avoid conversations about protection or independence for that matter?
I think that's right. What we see, and we talk to lots of couples, is that there are certain reasons that trigger someone to decide, hey, now is the right time for us to get a prenuptial agreement. Often one thing that happens, if people are coming to us with only days or weeks to go until the big day because they've left that conversation or left. Like, you would not believe the number of conversations I had with couples before the company was even a company and just doing discovery and talking to people. The number of conversations we had about, well, I'm really busy right now wedding planning, so I just don't have time to embark on the prenup process. And what you want to say is these things can go hand in hand. They work together in parallel. And actually, it may be the more important part of your I do to-do list. Do you say that to someone? I mean, we don't give, right? I'm not a family law attorney. I don't give people legal advice or financial advice. And what we try to do is speak from experience. The shift that I've seen, Jill, is really now when people reach out to us and they're asking us about the prenup process and how it might go, there is actually this big shift of people who are saying, I'm engaged or we're intending on getting married. We don't have a date because we plan the wedding date. Oh, in which in that way, it's like, isn't that the most because these people are spending hundreds of hours and however much it costs to have the wedding of your dream, if we can't get this prenup right and we don't want to have those people sweating the night before our big day. So I love that shift that we're seeing. And I think more and more of that shift really comes from this conversation happening, right? This dialogue being in the zeitgeist, like you're one of the people bringing this conversation to the pod. It's really powerful. There are people that will hear this conversation and that it will spark something in them as they're thinking about taking the next step to really pursue this as a top priority, not the last thing that they do before they walk down the aisle. Absolutely. I love that. Because, you know, in my experience with founders, when women start thinking about a business exit, what I notice isn't fear of the transaction. So you're like saying the wedding. It's hesitation around what changes after. It's that fear of the unknown. So do you see a similar pattern in relationships where prenup conversations get delayed because naming the future means confronting identity or letting go?
I think that's exactly right. There are a lot of emotions swirling in these moments. So in some ways, our team, we feel very privileged that we have the opportunity to connect people in this very high moment in their life. We also are really confronted with the fact that there's a lot of optimism bias when we're talking to these couples, the screeners, who are getting ready to embark on this. And everybody feels like, you know, it won't be me. I won't be the one that is splitting up or divorcing or forced to make a tough decision. But when we look at the data, the reality is that the data on divorce rates is not really changing in a significant way. So what can we do to educate ourselves about that, to get realistic about how we can be thoughtful about planning and the steps that we can take? That's really what we're here for, is to educate, be a partner along the way, and help more people have access to these great legal and financial tools that will enable them to make choices and decisions for themselves of how they'd like the future to look. There's also a lot of identity issues when it comes to people's professional career paths, their family businesses, right? That's a big driver for people and a big impetus to pursue a prenuptial agreement inheritance.
Yeah, I want to even speak to that, right? Can talk a little bit about the great wealth transfer, which is clearly afoot, right? Women are set to control more capital than ever before. And I'm wondering how that reality is showing up in the conversations you're having, especially around the inheritance, independence, and expectations that people have going into marriage.
So UBS really has the big data on this, right? About the great wealth transfer. And that comes from UBS's Global Wealth Survey.
$80 trillion set to change hands over the next, you correct me, 2 decades, 20, 30 years.
See, right now, just to be like super specific around that, while that could be next generation transfer, what we're seeing right now is a horizontal transfer from the traditional male breadwinner to his wife. And then she's stewarding the assets down to the next generation. So her values and her decision-making is critical. We have to school that woman up big time so that she's in a position to not just pass wealth, but to pass her value system to her children, who will ultimately be the heirs of capital.
So this is a major driver for people hoping to get a prenuptial agreement. I think there are a few reasons for this. The first is that if you think about the type of person marrying today for a first marriage, who's heading down, you know, the path to get married, they may be, if they're a millennial, they may be a child of parents who are divorced. And often, people let us know that the reason they're getting a prenup, even though they feel like their relationship is rock solid, is because of the impact that that divorce had on them and that they watched and witnessed among their parents. And that could be everything from big emotional battles and
financial insecurity for one parent or both parents. And so we think that this conversation being more mainstream, this dialogue being out there is a great thing because, like you said, we've got to educate people. Right? We've got to bring people up to speed about, you know, what happens if you don't pursue a prenuptial agreement. The reality is everybody has a prenup. I'll say it again because it's really important. Everybody has a prenup who gets married. It is either the one that you crafted for yourself or it is the one that aligns you with whatever your state determination is of how your assets will be split, premarital assets and postmarital, once you decide to embark on a divorce. We really believe in complete and full agency, that you can craft something really custom that works for you. Inheritance is a major driver of this. I mean, Jill, you will understand this because of the work that you do. We are seeing such a flip at the table where now we have millennials coming to us sort of dragging their parents who are embarking on their second or third marriages to come get a prenup. Why are they doing that? They're doing it to make sure that their expected inheritance is properly accounted for. Likewise, we see parents that are saying, hey, look, I've worked my whole life. I created this small or medium-sized business, or in some cases, a really large business. And whether or not that adult child works in that business or just stands to inherit it, you know, those parents want to be sure that that's not broken apart into pieces in a messy divorce. So tactics, let's talk about ways that parents can broach this topic with their children. Can you give me a couple of ideas? So the first thing that I would say is there's often this temptation to start from a place of fear, right? This fear-based idea. Well, if you don't do this, then here's what will happen. We actually see these conversations go much more smoothly when it's actually a very natural and direct dialogue that opens up a conversation. Have you thought about a prenuptial agreement? Have you heard of a prenuptial agreement? We have never talked about your potential future inheritance. Let me tell you a little bit about that so you have a sense of the financial picture. Starting with facts and opening up to have a respectful dialogue seems to be a really constructive way to start the conversation. And again, moving toward a place of education rather than fear, we also find bring both the parent and that adult child together in this, working in a more cooperative way versus I demand you get this document, you must get it. Now you've got someone who's kind of back on their heels and wondering how is my partner going to receive it? Remember, if you think the parent adult child conversation is complex, just imagine being the adult child wondering if you've never talked about this with your partner and have never talked about money, how you're suddenly going to pop up talking about a prenup. So to me, it's really about one, starting the money dialogue early, open up the conversation and, you know, see what the other person's openness and viewpoint is. There's so much dialogue happening about this. We have tons of content all over Instagram and TikTok. And sometimes parents broach this subject and the adult child says, of course I'm doing a prenup. Hello, I've like thought about this for 2 years and my partner and I have already talked about it. But if that's not where it's going, it's really more about education. Let's explore this together. Here's why I think this is important for you, why this could be important for you.
I love that. You know, I've found in my client family, particularly with multi-generational families, that the transparency between the parents and the children about what is coming at an appropriate age is really healthy because it prepares the children with time, right? How do you not, number one question for my clients is, how do I not screw my kids up? So how much is enough? And how can I start these conversations with my children? So that's even before they're talking about a prenup. Starting with your children having a healthy understanding of what they will likely inherit when you're gone or at a certain time. And then I love saying, what do you know about prenup? like putting it in their control, putting it in their timeline. This is obviously, it's not the week before the wedding. This is
conversation that happens in your 20s. Was super.
At an appropriate age. So I love.
Been a parent for one. I am very, very bonded. Y'all, I'm an ex on this, but what I can tell you is we have thousands of customers and we get to hear from them and what worked and what didn't. And they ask us often when they meet with our team for resources about how to broach this dialogue and this conversation. We offer prenup 101s and ultimate prenup prep checklists and different things. So if you're interested in something like that, you can head to our website and drop your email in for our ultimate prenup prep checklist. That's also a conversation starter. And that's really what it's meant to be, right? It's a 10-page cut through the legalese, simple document of like, why are you even embarking on this? If you're curious about this, here's what you need to know. Here's how you would prepare and here's how we can help. So that's available on thisfirst.com for folks that want a conversation starter or any of our guides on how to have that important dialogue.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that resource. You often say that prenups aren't really about money. So what are women actually, first of all, you said that more women are initiating a prenup than men at this point, which is interesting. So let's talk about that. But what are women actually trying to protect when they finally have these conversations?
We see about a 50-50 split between men and women initiating prenuptial agreements on our platform, which is amazing to see, right? We want to create products that really resonate with everyone as they kick this off. I think to a point about the great wealth transfer, increasingly, we have women that are inquiring about this because they are expecting inheritance, which leads us to believe that these conversations probably are happening with aging parents, particularly as people marry later for the first time, and they're entering into those marriages with more assets than ever before, right? We know the data on women as single family homeowners in the U.S. There are women starting businesses every single day. We have people that are executives at companies who on the side have content creator businesses and hobbies that are lucrative. And these are really the drivers for many of them coming to us to pursue a prenuptial agreement. We also see people that have all kinds of on both sides, right? It may be a couple who is, you know, both really hard charging. Maybe they are both lawyers, right? And they want to get a prenuptial agreement in a very collaborative, amicable process that feels like they both ended up in a good place. Not in a place where it was adversarial or competitive. We're really all about that. Like, how can you have that collaborative experience that brings you both to the table and gets you both out of it without the battle scars? We don't ever want to see our customers feeling that way. And so one of the hallmarks of what we do at First is work with amazingly qualified family law experts to really understand how to get customers there. So it could be everything from inheritance as a driver to their career and the career they've invested in over, you know, could be multiple decades, depending on the person reaching out to us. Pets are a major driver. We jokingly call these pet nuts, but right, like pets are property. And if you get a pet with your partner, what happens? If it's a brief marriage and you decide to split and that pet is a family member to you too, that's outlined. Those types of things are outlined in prenuptial agreement. So there are a lot of drivers. I would say inheritance is a major one. Also partners that are embarking on additional education would like to protect their partner from any loans that they might take out and pursuing a master's degree or you know, other type of advanced education degree and want to make sure that, you know, that student loan debt is really theirs and is separate and is memorialized somewhere. So those are just examples of the kinds of things we see. We also see everything from, you know, we've had people come through that are musicians and singer-songwriters who want to protect the things that they've written and their art and their craft, their intellectual property and intangibles as well. And those things do have a different meaning to people than just
money. Pre-money. Are about values.
Is your value system. How do you think about this? They might be about the work and the toil and the sweat equity that you put into this every day until, you know, this moment. And how does that get represented in the agreement? They might be about something that has huge meaning to you, that is something that was passed down in your family, that's very sentimental, that may not have significant monetary value, but that you want to be sure doesn't end up in a big battle at the end.
I think that's actually a very beautiful way of looking at it. Feels peaceful and loving going into a marriage, honoring each other's values and history and family legacy. So thank you for sharing that. Let's land this plane, my friend. If someone is listening quietly and maybe questioning what still fits, whether in love or in business, what would you want her to know about clarity and letting go that you've learned?
There is a narrative that we read about and hear about in the media of never giving enough. You just keep, and that's a great quality to have, right? Persistence and intuitiveness, those are great things. In business and in love, it's also really, really smart and savvy to be able to take a step back, examine the situation, really reflect on what your values are, what you're learning, what you have left to learn, and be able to make decisions from a place of real confidence in oneself, particularly if something is not serving you in the way that it needs to. And so sometimes we see this, I think, in the business world where people stay in a situation where they stop learning, there's no personal growth, and they're encouraged just to kind of stick with it. And sure, you can do that. That's okay. For me, there's absolutely no judgment. But I think really examining, is this how I want to spend the valuable time that I have? Or are there other opportunities for me to learn and to grow? Can I stretch myself?
Similarly, in love, like if you're looking something
that fulfills you and you're in a place where you're not finding that, there's a lot of value and learning and, again, that personal growth and trying to figure out how you can reflect, what you can do, what your partner can do. But we never really hear the stories that often of the people who made the courageous decision to step out, whether it's in business or in love, and how that was really powerful and transformative for them. So I always want, whether it's my friends, my family members, my girlfriends, you know, the colleagues that I work with, I want everyone to really feel like they're in the right place. The journey is long. And I think if we can judge less and be open-minded about understanding that, the learning and the growth and the ability to really step back and reflect, like, is this right for me right now? We can make decisions from a different place. I don't think it's a good idea to knee-jerk on decision-making and move too quickly, but I often think that we are trapped by this idea imposed upon ourselves that, like, if me give up, we're a failure.
Ooh.
And I don't believe in that. I mean, I think even probably the failures that I have had are probably the biggest lessons that I have learned, bar none. So I don't want people to be afraid to evaluate things for how they are and make clear decisions, be able to step back and try to make clear decisions that are right for you.
Yeah, whether it's love or a business or a version of yourself, clarity is an act of self-respect. And what I love is that you don't have to navigate it alone. There are organizations like yours, like FIRST. There are financial advisors like myself who can be there to support you along the way. Livy, how can our listeners learn more about you and about first if they're interested in knocking on your door.
Awesome, Jill. Thank you. So to learn more about FIRST and what we do, you'd want to head to our website, fistfirst.com, FIRST.com. I'm sure this will end up in the show notes. We are also, we love to connect on social. So if you're on Instagram, you can find us at FIRST. And you can also find us on TikTok at FIRST, FIRST. And you can find me on LinkedIn and our company on LinkedIn. So it's not hard to find us. Check us out, fistfirst.com. You can scroll all the way to the bottom, enter your email if you want to get our ultimate prenup prep checklist. And then you can also connect on our social there too.
Thank you, Libby. Thank you so much for your insights. I'm super grateful and I'm sure the listeners are too. I'm signing off, Jill Lloyd at UBS.com. If you want to reach out to me. But in the meantime, wishing you all a very lovely Valentine's season, lots of love in your life, and keep growing. Onward.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.